His FIAN scent trumpet won newspaper hairdyers ex canary Efanikuku grabbed the winner in the Don's 2-1 victory at Norwich. It really makes nice reading to see Wimbledon seventh in the Premiership, manager Joe Kinnear said. Seventh? I think we could do better than that. We're the same old Wombles. We're back.
Might not be life or death, my friend, but to me, it's more important than that.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Same Old Wombles podcast, the third rate podcast. It's fantastic, isn't it? Today, I am joined by my friend, R. Cooper. Intermittently, he's on a train, by the running producer that is Adam Proctor, and my good friend, Mark Lewis. Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you all doing? Mark, you all right, mate?
I'm very good, thank you very much. Yes, I actually had one of those really busy work days, which meant that all the exciting football news that we're going to discuss, like the new AFC Wimbledon app and other slightly more important things, I didn't even have a clue about until about 5 minutes ago.
It's exciting.
Although John Green's YouTube video, frankly, is a piece of priceless humour, which Adam, producer Adam, hopefully will add and maybe laugh out loud three times.
Yeah. It's exciting, though, isn't it, to get all that information at once? It's like a little bit of a Christmas stocking. The end of the day, you open your phone and suddenly all this news, when you think it's going to be a slow news day and all this news comes in. There wasn't any eyes. I didn't see any eyes on social media. Usually some eyes saying...
Oh, my God. You mean we actually managed to get something through without someone
I know.
What is the world coming to?
I know. No leaks. I mean, really, it's disappointing, isn't
it? We had no idea because we're completely unofficial, as we...
I can't work out how official we are. I think there's a percentage of officialness. I'm not entirely sure what...
I love the fact I got told on social media that all of you lot signed the fans charter. It's like, no, you didn't.
I don't even know what the fans charter looks like.
Exactly.
I'd say just putting it out there. Fans charter.
What's that? Did something with the fans charter. We're not entirely sure what it is. We might come back to that later. Adam, how are you doing, mate? We've had to change the time when we record this podcast deliberately so we can make Adam run as fast as possible.
I got my breath back, thankfully. I'm used to us running it on a different time. Anyway, the other exciting thing is, though, that I downloaded the official app weeks ago because it appeared on the iOS App Store. So I totally am ahead of the game. I somehow got into Discord early, which isn't available for anyone either. Like, I'm totally in the official group because I'm officially, unofficially getting access to all these things already. So can I just, has the app actually now been announced as it's out and available for everyone? Is that what's happened today as well?
Yeah.
Wow. Excited, people, because it's not that exciting.
I'm interested to know, though, Adam, with this early access that you had to Discord and the app and everything, with this early access that you've had, has it given us any breaking exclusive news? Were we able to break anything before? No. So it's this early access hasn't given us any advantage.
No. The app looks like the website, which everyone's had access to before. And Discord, I accidentally got invited very early, so there isn't anyone else on there. And I'm just being very quiet so as to not appear that I'm actually on there.
I know.
Because people were surprised.
You'd be talking to yourself. Talking to people, talking to themselves. Monfrey and Al Cooper, can you hear us okay? How are you doing?
He's on the underground.
Yeah, he's gone. He's disappeared.
I can hear you. Oh. I can hear you. I'm just obviously on the phone, therefore finding the unmute button on the Zoom app. While traveling, for those of you who don't know, we record this on Zoom. So, you know, I am here. I'm here, and I'm also fundamentally disappointed that when you've got to be like Adam Proctor's profile with his exclusive access to things, and we have had no exclusives. And that is obviously because we are now officially 0.7% official because of Adam's access. I think that's the figure.
0.7%. I understand you've been to and from the House of Lords. So I'm looking forward to later on hearing more about what's happening with the Football Governance Bill and the filibustering that's going on, because it's exciting that everyone is trying to block this thing.
Is it?
That is the big thing tomorrow. That's all happening. So today was just meeting a few ministers, doing a bit of the political smoozing and stuff like that, just trying to get a few bits and bobs all sorted. All very exciting. I'm fresh from there, all suited and booted.
I'm excited to hear how this goes. And this is why we're official, because we're able to mix. Well, one of us is able to mix with ministers and get things hot off the press.
Officially something.
He is officially something, but we're not going to go into that yet.
I think also Mark Lewis is officially tall. If you looked at the definition of what is tall, I think Mark Lewis would definitely come in the tall category of being officially tall, which probably pushes up to 1.2% of being official. So hopefully by the end of this podcast, we could be like almost double figures on our official rating. But definitely Mark Lewis, officially tall.
Okay, so Adam, we can just delete that last bit, yeah? Anyhow, so what we've got, we haven't had any football. We've had no football. And I have to say, I was so excited about the Cheltenham game. I was really, really looking forward to it. So disappointed that it was called off. And then yet again, I'm not even sure what to do with this, because on social media, it just starts to kick off. And I think maybe there's a, what we're missing on social media sometimes is a nuance button, because, you know,
I can't
obviously
spell the word nuance, let alone use a nuance button. Yeah.
But I think the issue being that there was a day before the club put out this thing saying we're prepared because we've got these heaters and we've got this thing in place that we were able to deal with this. And apparently
pitch covers is the word you're looking for.
Pitch covers. They can go down to -3 or -4. So that's what they can do. But the weather overnight went down to -7. It was the coldest it's been for 14 years. So much like when we had the rain earlier in the season, which caused the flood, that was unprecedented. This weather going down to -7 in southwest London is unprecedented. So I think that everyone did such an amazing job to try and get the match on. It was, you know, it was, it's, you know, it, they everyone did everything, did whatever they could, and it just didn't happen. Adam, I can see you're animated.
It's so like, no, because it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't, isn't it? What the club put out before was to explain that we'd bought upgraded covers and that was going to be part of our, you know, one of our arsenal of things we'd be able to deploy during the winter period, which is when it's going to be cold. And to tell the fans that we've got upgraded covers, that we're going to make sure that we use them, you know, it's great. Really good news. It's like, oh, brilliant. We've got these. We've got something new. It's the same as when they talked about the fact they'd upgraded the flood insurance well in advance of us actually having those flooding things happen. It's like, okay, we found it afterwards, but it's like, you know, I think in the past we have, or some fans have decried not getting the covers out quick enough, not having the covers, like whatever it is, right? And there's certainly, we heard about that before ages ago. So I think it was all well and good for the club to say, in the winter period, just so everyone knows, we have already invested in much better covers. And so we, you know, obviously we've got two home games in a row. They're really important to us. And, you know, we're prepared as well as we can. And as you've just said, the covers that we had were designed to work at -3. And it was much colder than that. Coldest spell in X number of years, etc. How many games got played in League One and League Two and the Championship? It was like
two, wasn't it? No, two
like
games,
hardly any. And it's like, so, you know, what are people really upset about? I mean, probably they're upset about paying for travel, having to leave, etc. You know, my dad left the Isle of Wight before 10 o'clock. I left Southampton before midday, you know, because that's what time we need to leave to get to the ground. We understood those pitch inspections, hoping that it will be fine, you know, and it wasn't. But then you read afterwards that there was literally staff, stroke volunteers, up all night, moving heaters around, doing all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Like, they weren't just sitting on a warm train travelling to Earlsfield. They were up all night. Like, it's like they tried their best. And you could see that parts of the pitch were still frozen. And at this, you know, this day and age, it's, if players play on there and they're injured and that injury is substantial, that's a big deal. You know, and so you know, could they have called it off earlier, etc.? I don't think so. They would, you know, they wanted it on. They wanted to try and get it on, and they did all they could. I was hoping the heaters would do the thing. I don't think anyone misplaced the heaters, didn't deploy the things in time, etc. They did everything possible, and like you said, it was just, yeah, we can't afford to have, you know, transport the sun and place it, you know, on our pitch. You know, it's like we're not a Premier League club who have very different setups. You know, it's like, chill.
I love
out.
The idea that Premier League clubs could move the sun and put it on their pitch.
Well,
that's the sort of money that they have. Yeah.
Obviously, what Premier League clubs can afford is to set up a stadium like something like the Emirates or even Tottenham's new stadium would have been built, where they're spending tens of millions of pounds and therefore putting in undersoil heating, which would cost, I suspect, a few million, is almost a completely straightforward thing to do to be able to factor in. We know, unfortunately, in certain circumstances, we're beginning to discover when extreme weather happened, that certain things were not factored in when the original build of the stadium was done. And rather than crying over the old spilt milk type scenario, we just get on with deal with the reality. Like we get on deal with the reality of, you know, we don't have anyone that can replace Bugle, for example, as a like-for-like replacement in the team. But we appear to have come up with a different formation. And with someone like Marcus Brown coming in, who I know as a player, and the fact that we're signing players even on short-term deals, like Brown, like Romain Sawyers, and like Sam Hutchinson, to me indicates A, that our scouting network is getting better, B, that we're planning appropriately and properly, and C, that we actually are an attractive, viable organisation. Which, given the resources we have, is once again more credit to Craig Cope and the recruitment team.
I mean, you're right, Mark. I mean, we were coming onto this. I mean, it's just having the games off. But the good thing has been through that, I know that we've got players coming back. So our understanding is that Joe Lewis and James Ball are on grass. In actual fact, I think they're going to be training with the team this week. We've brought in Marcus Brown, which is fantastic. So for those who don't know, played most of his playing career has been in with Oxford United, and he was part of the side that got promoted into the Championship. He has had his fair
last
share
season.
Last season, he had his fair share of injuries, and I know that he was out of contact in the summer of 2024. But again, what's interesting is he was on this PFA training program, which Romain Sawyers was on as well. He talks about it. So if you go on to the club website and you listen to the interview with him, he talks about it, says it's as close to a club training session as you're going to get. So it feels like Craig Cope is making the most of that. I'm wondering if he's got sort of like links in with that training program. But yeah, it seems like we're making the most out of that. So that's fantastic. So we've got players coming back in. Mark, I don't know if you had known any news on Omar or Matt. It's been so long since I've seen him play. Our midfield guy, them. Maycock. I don't know if anyone else. Yeah, anyone news on
anyone else? No, I don't. But you know what? I mean, I was thinking about this the other day. Bit of a reflection on literally halfway through the season without obviously being able to play as many games as we planned to in recent times. But if you tried to name a full-strength team and a full-strength squad, I did this the other day, and I did this before we had signed Brown, obviously, because it only happened today. Yeah. And when I did it, I forgot about certain players, Callum Maycock, including Ryan McLean, bless him, who's obviously been injured virtually all the season. And I got to a point where I'd named a first-choice team, and I'd be interested in everyone's version of the first-choice team, because I'm sure it would differ, and subs, and tried to remember how many subs you're allowed to do nowadays, because I did this, and even accounting for people like Sidwell and Williams, for example, and the young lad... Amis Sarr, I believe his name is, the young first-year professional midfield player. I had left about five or six players on the bench. No, not on the bench. Five or six players, including actually Huspiller, I'd left not out of the squad completely. And obviously, some of them will play and some of them will feature in the next month or so, at least until Bugle and Maycock and Ball and Short Shorts are back in full time. But yeah,
So what would be
we're in a strong position.
what would be your team?
What would be my team?
Yeah, what would be what would you play? Who
Well,
would you?
I found a little clip where Hutchinson basically had named his dream team, which is mainly full of Chelsea players, obviously. But he played himself in the back three. So if he's playing himself in the back three, then I think the player surely knows his own favourite position, right? So I'm playing Goodman, Nerfril and Tilly wingbacks. I'm playing Hutchinson in the middle of Oggs. No, not Oggs. There you go. That's how strong it is. Hutchinson in the middle of Joe Lewis and Ryan Johnson. Then you've got Smith and Jake Greaves in the middle with obviously there's your four, so your three four. Two, and then I'll carry on with this two behind one formation. So you've got Omar and Hippolyte, in my opinion, behind Matt Stevens, which then leaves you with the luxury of James Ball and Callum Maycock and Oggs and Lewis Ward as backup keeper and Jonjo O'Toole and Josh Kelly. Matt's writing all these things down to see whether I get to actually
I
seven
am.
subs.
I am. I'm.
But do you see what I mean in terms of a relative strength position? And that was all done obviously without Marcus Sawyers. Marcus Sawyers, excuse me, without Marcus Brown.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's
I mixed up
okay.
two lonely players, two
Well,
short-term
it's
players.
okay because basically, we're of a certain age now where we can forget things. I mean, I can't remember if it's Alan or Jake Reeves has been in outside for the last 2 seasons.
Jake Greaves doesn't score stonking own goals with headers from 25 yards.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. Which was an amazing party trick, especially twice against Villa. Anyhow, for those who were there, that's it. That is interesting. I mean, I don't. I guess my only thing would be, and Niall and Adam, it'd be interesting to know what you think on this. But in that three up front, you at the moment, at the moment, Mark's saying Hippolyte, Bugle, Stevens. I would still have. I would probably have Kelly over Hippolyte, and then what would be interesting is, and then a sub, so whether Hippolyte comes in to replace Kelly, and then Brown replaces Bugle. But does that, what does that look like? What does that sound like to you? I mean, what would be, Adam, what would you agree with that as a starting lineup?
Well, I've got Bugle up front and backed up by Stevens and Kelly,
Of course.
So I mean, I know, yeah, I think that for me is like the best formation. Stevens, Kelly, Bugle up front, definitely. I think I've got Goodman in goal, obviously. I like Ogundeyi, I like O'Toole, I like Johnson, I like Nerfville. Reeves would go in there somewhere. Smith, Tilly, that would probably be my starting 11. And then on the
Okay, so you've named all the players.
no, I didn't. I named 11.
So
I'm literally looking at a list. That's the 11 players.
you'd have Oggs, you wouldn't have Joe Lewis and Hutchinson.
I think I'd swap out Hutchison, yeah, and have Reeves, Smith, Tilly, and Nerville in the four. Lewis, but I don't know about Lewis can come. I mean, again, it's like. They're not like I think what Mark says, the nice thing is you can sort of swap these players in and out, and it's not a big deal, other than I think Bugle up front, backed up by really for me Stevens and Kelly. After that, you've got a lot of options to push people in and out. And the signing today clearly indicates that we could have some backup at the front now. So I think we're in a really good place, I mean, I think Belair, I think, could be really good, but just has. Made some mistakes and hasn't been able to shine. I think the good thing is we don't have a ton of depth, but we have options. That's what I like is there's kind of like for like. There's I mean I never know who's who anyway. They all look the same. They got the same haircut, the same whatever, right? I mean, Stephen's obviously got quite a different haircut, but you know, I'm like, whatever. But now actually they play the same. So not only do they look the same, they play the same. I'm like, fine, just kind of figure it out. There's people I really like, Nerfield, Bugle. I like Belair a lot still. I think Ogundeer's great. You know, they're my favourites. And maybe this new person.
Well, when you say you like Belair a lot,
yeah.
If we are picking a playoff, let's get ahead of ourselves, playoff semi-final squad.
Sake.
Why?
And there's two minutes to go.
Would Belair be anywhere near that squad?
No, but he isn't this season. I don't think he is. I don't think he is, unfortunately.
Oh, you like him, you just wouldn't put him in your squad?
Yeah, I think he's not. I think he just hasn't. Yeah. I think he's got something. It just hasn't happened this season.
Adaman Hospiller in a tree. K-A-S-S-I-N-G.
Belair has certainly got something. It's the ability to scare me with 2 minutes to go when he comes on the pitch.
I refer my honourable friend to last week's pod where I believe I used the word break glass in cases of emergency only.
Yeah. Listen, I agree with you. I think he's got some wonderful strengths. He can be a brilliant player going forwards. He still needs to work on that defensive side of his game, which is. And what's interesting in all of this is Sasu's name's not mentioned here.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
I think he's going to be someone who's going to be very interested. I want to ask this question: have we solved our striking? Because that was the big thing. We're looking about getting a new striker in. Have we solved that with getting Brown in? Is that, are we now not looking? If we were looking to strengthen anywhere, would you look to get someone else in? And also, the other person that's not mentioned is Piggott. So what's going to happen there?
I don't think anything can happen.
Anyone can see what Adam is doing, yes.
I think, you know, the AFC Wimbledon football populace, that's not obviously anyone inside the club at all, mm-hmm. has... justifiably or otherwise, written Piggott off, and I'd love him to prove us all wrong, but we've written him off based on this season. But if we can't send him back, then we can't send him back, and that's just the nature of the risk that we took, and that we've been burnt by that in the past with the likes of Riley Taylor and Magoma, for example. But they obviously weren't that bad because Riley Taylor's now playing in the Championship, and Magoma made his debut in the Brentford team that gloriously lost in the FA Cup to Plymouth. But
well, you know, if you're going to take a step backwards after you leave us, and you know, it's going to take a long time for you to wash that dirt off. You know,
that's very true. No, you never wash that kind of dirt off.
No, you never do. So it's interesting. I mean, like you say, Adam, what's weird is you're saying we haven't got strength in depth, but I would say that, you know, to have at least a cover in every single position, and I think the other thing is people being able to switch wings or switch positions. So we've got people that prefer to play in a particular place. But, you know, Hutchinson, Mark, as you say, drops into the back three. You know, O'Toole can play there. Both of them can play in midfield. So it's, you know, we have got some brilliant options. I mean, I think for me, the nervousness really is if something happens to Tilly or Nerfield. That's I think, is where we might have an issue, because
that's the one thing I can see actually flexing a little bit in the rest of the transfer window the last couple of weeks or so. I think they thought Furlong as an under-21 Republic of Ireland international would actually be first choice, and Tilly has just come in and made that his own and does not deserve in any way to be dropped, and both in terms of goals and in terms of assists, been absolutely integral to our team. To the point where we want to be able to get Tilly and Nerfield signed up on new contracts if we can.
Yeah.
But we're in that never land that we don't know what division we're going to be in. We don't obviously have a massive budget. Are they actually going to be good enough for League One?
Yeah. All these,
anyway,
these things,
who knows? But we probably have to sign them up before we know whether they will. We will need them to be in League One.
I would think with both Tilly and Nerfield, that they are two players that whatever division we're in, we need to have on our books. Because I think they are so integral to what we want to do going forward. You know, I think they are players that would be all right in League One, and they're definitely players we'd want to have in League Two if we didn't go up.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree. No, what do you think of this sort of like starting 11. You know, Goodman, Lewis, Hutchinson, Johnson, Nuffield and Tilly, Smith and Reed in the middle, and then Kelly and Bugle behind Stevens, or Hippolyte and Bugle behind Stevens.
I'm kind of pro that. I mean, that back three, though, it's like, you know, where you had Goodman in goal, who was back three?
Lewis, Hutchinson, Johnson.
See, that's, you see, look, Hutchinson's in my mind a bit untried there, but obviously if he's put himself in there, you know, obviously it's worth a shout. That, for me, you know, where we're at a team that seems solid and robust in all positions, which I don't think we've ever really been at for a long time. You know, this is what Craig Cope has talked about before, hasn't it? That we've got a team, we haven't got a star. I mean, I'm saying that. I think Stevens is probably going to be attracting some attention, but I think Stevens is doing well in a team that is creating chances. And with Tilly and Nerfield, when they're on the ball, you know, you can see the advantage. And I think with the new formation with Bugle and Kelly causing chaos behind Stevens, I think there's just chances appearing all over the place. So I think we're in a position where if you've got anybody who's remotely a goal poacher, they're going to be scoring goals in the way we're set up at the moment. So it just feels like, God, I'm going to sound like Ray Harford. Sounds like an exciting team. You know, for those of you who watched the video from 1991, we'll really remember that kind of quote. But yeah, I mean, I think it is, it's looking pretty promising at the moment, you know. So I think, you know, we just have to look at it. I quite like having all these games in hand and being sitting just outside the promotion places, because it feels like, you know, we win one of those, we could do it late on, we could pinch a promotion place. And I quite like that way we are. I mean, other than that, I'd rather us be like where Walsall are, obviously, but you know.
What, in Birmingham?
Well, obviously, Matt, you know my view on Birmingham, the Midlands. Everybody knows that. I'll have unusual views on where I think the North begins as well. But let's not go into that. I caused myself enough editing problems for Adam every single week. This is probably one I ought not go down, Matt.
Yeah, stop now, Nye. No more talk about Walsall, for goodness sake. So, I mean, and I guess so, bringing it on to Saturday, with Bugle still being out, does Brown go straight into the side? Does he go straight into the team?
No. No. No way. That would be insane. Like, he needs to train more with them.
So I disagree with that. Wow. We don't know how good Brown is, right? We don't know how good Brown is. If we had Pelé in his prime and he was bought for us, of course he'd go straight into the team, right? That's the point. So we don't know
how good Brown is. There's the quote for the pod. Marcus Brown is Pelé.
Marcus Brown as Pelé. It's amazing, isn't it? He's got off the train and now Pelé, he's just giving us all this.
When I say Pelé, I actually meant Pel.
Yeah, right. No, for me, Hippolyte's trained now for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Hippolyte knows the routine, knows the players. He's also left-footed. So, to be honest, Kelly does not deserve to get dropped. But if you're in that position where you can actually be able to put players on the bench to really champing at the bit, then that's so much more positive. I mean, I'm looking at the upcoming fixtures. You'd like to think, and I know I said this last week.
Oh,
and
again, God, Mark, the voice
you'd
like
of to
doom.
Think that we can beat Tranmere. I'll be no more overboard than that. After Tranmere, you've got franchise away, followed by crew away immediately on the Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Bradford at home.
Yeah.
Accrington away, and then crew at home immediately after Accrington, followed by Salford at home. That it's actually, tough. In terms of where those teams are in the table right now, could in its own, in a 6 or 7 game run, be quite decisive.
Yeah.
So if we come through that and you've got no more injuries and you've got the likes of Hippolyte and Brown and Bugle and Joe Lewis reintegrated or integrated, as the case may be, into the team, into the squad, you're in a great place. You know, and you've got 15 games left or so of the season and you can really give it a good crack. The rearranged games haven't been put in place yet, as far as I can see. At the moment, we've only got one midweek game in the rest of January, one in February, and one in March, and a couple in April. So that will change.
Yeah,
that will change.
We've got at least a couple more. And whether they're going to be in Feb or March, I'm not sure. That will be interesting. I think there'll be another one, at least another one in Feb. But yeah, it's a, we're in a good position. We really are. It's looking, you know, it's looking interesting for the next few games. And I just want to say this one thing. And Mark, you brought it up very at the beginning, very briefly, the way that Brown was announced and his signing. So yet again, and I think we have to add John Green to our list of potential club persons of the year for again stepping in and they're helping subsidise Marcus Brown's fee. Obviously not his, obviously not the transfer because he's joined us on a free transfer. But I'm guessing he's had to put his hands in his pocket to help out with
The
wages over the next few
way
months.
it's been done is ridiculous. You actually watch the John Green video, which not the one where he talks to Marcus Brown on Teams or Zoom or whatever, but actually the one where he sort of talks to his brother Hank about how he's done it. Literally, this has been funded by, I guess, the Nerdfighters or whatever the equivalent is of the people that follow John Green online and pay a small subscription for that, and that's the money he's used.
And some of
Question
his own.
for all of you.
No, I think Mark's right. It's actually also on the amount of clicks as well. So you get a bit of a fee for people who watch his stuff. So, like, basically, if we want to sign another really good player, everybody should go
Hello.
and subscribe, like Pele. Though Pele's obviously got a problem now, Matt.
Yeah, he
It's
is.
just
Sorry.
it's a
He's a
small
little bit
problem.
past it.
He's a
He's
bit
deceased.
past it.
That's his problem.
Yeah, that's his
There
thing.
he is
Rest
an
in peace.
ex-footballer. That is an
He ceased to
ex-footballer.
be. He's kicked the bucket.
He's no longer. Yes.
No,
He's an
no,
ex-footballer.
no, 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 no. We might be old, but we're not going down the Monty Python route.
Too late. Too late.
Steffi's sorry, Matt.
Can I ask
That
my
is
question?
an ex-footballer.
My
Yeah.
question is slightly more serious. My
Ceased to
question
be.
is.
Yeah. Well, good luck getting over Niall. He's got excited about this whole thing.
Thank you. We'll turn Niall off. Should we be concerned? Genuine question, one that I've seen on a few WhatsApp groups that I'm part of this afternoon. Should we be concerned that for the second January transfer window in a row, the way we've been able to acquire a player of a certain quality, initially Joe Lewis and in this case, Marcus Brown, has only, by the look of it, realistically been because of this type of one-off or two-off, so to speak, funding from the in this case the source of John Green, because obviously that's not a sustainable situation.
Isn't it? I don't know. I don't know if it might be a sustainable thing. I would say that it's a brilliant thing to have something like that is fantastic, don't you think? And also, it gets the word out there again about AFC Wimbledon. He's got such a following, so I
Not
think it's a
It's a
it's
load of
fantastic.
nonsense. I don't know what groups you're on, Mark, and I certainly don't look at the social media.
I'm not saying I
No,
believe it. I'm putting the
I get
question out there.
Mark.
It's called a point for discussion, my friend.
I get Mark's point. I get Mark's point about it, right? Because if you're talking about, is that money always going to be there forevermore to cover it? Probably not. What I do get is that the PR value of what John Green has just done is worth loads. And that for me is another great example of trying to do it. Our problem ultimately.
Our problem is ultimately your Zoom dropping out whilst you're walking through the black zone in
Because you know
Hindley
we're
Green.
selling out all the time, so John Green wants to.
Yeah, it's
If
great.
John Green's
Adam,
going
you're
to do
going
the
to have to
next
do this
bit,
bit as well.
Let's come back to like, hang on. So we'll come. We'll try and get Niall back in and figure out whether I need to chop that bit out or not. I mean, I think the thing is, I think, like, I am pretty confident that at no point is Craig Cope or Johnny Jackson or anyone relying on an individual like John Green to help us purchase players. It happens in the last two seasons that John Green has, through whatever means, allowed and enabled himself through different means to finance a couple of players. That's fantastic. We're not relying on it. I don't think anyone was relying on it. And I think from what you kind of hear, and sure, it's going to be editing or whatever, it's John Green literally saying, I can help with some funding. Have you got anyone in mind, kind of thing, etc. So I think anyone who's getting worried about that is making a mistake. We're not relying on it. It's just that we have been very fortunate to have an individual who is thankfully, decided that they would like at this point to support the club through a particular method of injecting cash, and whether that be sponsorship, which we've appreciated for a long time, and other methods is fantastic. And I would strongly encourage people, instead of being upset that individuals feel that they can use their means to support something they find wonderful, I'd think again about what he says in the video. He's supporting us because we're fan-owned and because he loves what we do. And there are probably lots more individuals that we could get on board who want to do that kind of stuff. So I think it's nonsense to think that we should worry about this stuff. We've done a great job. We're fortunate. Let's hope the player turns into something fantastic. And like Niall said, the marketing, I sent those videos to people who are just kind of fringe fans, of Wimbledon, and they love it because it's like, wow, that's amazing, that's so cool, And I think, again, it comes back to this idea, which is instantly why I thought, wasn't like, oh no, we've got to worry about whether John Green's going to give us some money next year. It's more a case of, we got to worry about when we don't have people like John Green who really love us and do that kind of stuff, because we've made poor decisions, whether that's to dilute our fan ownership and those kind of things, because we're in a gold position, and it's fantastic. So those cynical nonsense, we're not relying on John Green.
I want to just add to Adam's point there. The reason why John Green decided to give money for that player is because he utterly buys in to what AFC Wimbledon stands about as being a fans club. And he talks in that video quite adamantly about how proud he is that it's one member, one vote, whatever you do. There are people out there, and that kind of ethos is the bit that's meant that we now have Marcus Brown as a player. That is a direct result of being a fan-owned club. And, we can't deny that.
Yeah. And I think, Matthew, the last thing I was going to say on that is that, again, I'll link to the two videos, at least there's two or three, that we've got the official one, and then we've got the Vlog Brothers, whatever they're called, is that, then John Green has a Zoom call with Marcus explaining how he's been able to afford to get him to the club, and explaining just like, well, it's because we're all fans and we don't have anyone rich, etc. And because I've, streamed on YouTube FIFA games as Wimbledon, I can afford to get you in. And I think even that conversation is going to have a massive impact on how he plays for us, just by having, because that's so different to how you'd be signed by anyone else. He's been brought back into the club. Like you said, he wasn't on contract because an individual has felt he'd be great for Wimbledon, because the people who are in charge, Craig Cope and Johnny Jackson, have obviously, Jackson talked about the fact that he'd looked at him before. You don't get that passion by the fact that you're just being paid by some millionaire at some random club. I think that Marcus is going to have this kind of... I think he's just going to play his socks off just because of that one conversation on Zoom with John Green.
I hope so, Adam. In actual fact, if it doesn't work out, we're coming back to you for your... I think you're going to have to give us the first view of... Brown, does he live up to your expectations? I just want to go briefly through some other bits of football news if we can, and then we can come back and pick some stuff up. I see, again, the women's team won on the weekend, 1-0 away at Oxford, which is great, and they're now up to fourth. They are flying. Hashtag United are top, but Ipswich are just behind them, and I know that Ipswich have got a very strong side. Again, one of the issues, I think, with the women's league at the moment, the format of it is, I believe it's just one up. I don't think there's a playoff or anything like that. It's literally just one up and one down. So you've got to be the top side in the league to get out of it. So it might take us a bit of time to get through it. But brilliant
results. What should be said about that, though, is our aim this season in the women's league, the appropriate league, was to consolidate.
Yeah.
And considering what we have and the resource and so on, that is the equivalent of the type of thing that Wimbledon were doing in the Division 1 when we were first promoted in the late 80s.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. They are exceeding expectations. I think there was nervousness because a few players because of the distances now, that a few players might not have been able to do it. Because I know it does take a lot to get around, but it's
There's been a big squad overhaul. I think there's only 4 or 5 players left for that exact reason, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And they've, for example, they've played all season with one goalkeeper because one of the goalkeepers left at the end of last season because of the distance travelling wise. And the other one reported back for pre-season training pregnant, and she had a baby on Christmas Eve or a couple of days after Christmas, something like that.
That is brilliant. Well, that's great news. Congratulations. I think that's fantastic. I mean, and Ashley Hinks keeps knocking goals in. She is amazing. And we are going to a game. Adam, what's the game we've picked we're going to?
Oh, you see, there's a men's game on the Saturday. So literally, I'm in Wimbledon for 2 days in a row. I was trying to look it up the other day.
I think it's Ipswich, actually.
I think it is Ipswich. Yeah, we're going to. You should just stay over, my friend. Just keep partying the whole night through, like the party animal you are.
The 9th of March is the game we're going to. But I don't know who we're playing. But yeah, Sunday the 9th of March, 2 p.m. kickoff is the game that we're going to see the women. And the day before that, the men's are playing Notts County. So yeah, maybe I should just like hang out in a nightclub till like 6 a.m. and then, you know.
I would pay money.
I'd pay money to see you.
I'd be asleep literally on the speaker. That's what would be happening. I'd be like, oh, yeah.
I also want to pick up. It is Ipswich. I just want to pick up on DLAG, the Don's Local Action Group. Fantastic. So obviously our game was cancelled at the last minute on Saturday, but they were able to have the agreement with some of the food providers to make sure the food that was already made up went to DLAG, which they were able to distribute out. Again, fantastic. And today, hearing about the launch of their DLAG in Tune, a partnership with the Jack Lonergan Foundation, a former fan, and this initiative will provide free musical instruments to young people from low-income families across southwest London, breaking down financial barriers to music. You know, and obviously the field that I work in, I think that is fantastic because it's so expensive. Some of the equipment is so expensive to get hold of. So it's brilliant that this exists. So that's a wonderful piece of work. DLAG, yet again, you guys are fantastic. It was wonderful earlier on this season. We spoke to Zav about the work. Please do check out the DLAG website and find out about how you can contribute, because there's obviously ways you can put, you can bring along cans and such like and drop them off at the ground as well. And they do work outside the supermarkets around the local area.
Just a quick addition to that, the Jack Lonergan Foundation is actually a charity arrangement that was put together by Mickey Michael, who is Jack's father. And Mickey is the kind of same age as most of us. And I, way back in the day, I actually was part of a group, and Mark Jones was part of it as well. He played for Carlton Fairweather FC, which was a Sunday League football team made out of Wimbledon fans. He played on Dundonald Wreck in Wimbledon, around the corner from where I grew up, in the late 80s, early 90s, I want to say. And Jack was Mickey's son there that used to come and kick the ball around with us before games. And a lot of these lads are still going to the game. Tragically, absolutely tragically, Jack, in his late 20s, possibly early 30s, who, whilst he was a promising music teacher around Southwest London, had a heart attack after a game and passed away. And this is going back a couple of years now. And as I say, I've known Mickey for years and he still comes to games. And that foundation was put together in his memory. And the fact that they're teaming up with DLAG is a wonderful activity. And rest in peace, Jack, and obviously more power to Mickey and everyone involved in that foundation for what they're doing to be able to encourage young people to be involved in the engagement in learning music.
Yeah, and talking of passing away, sad passing away, from Wimbledon in sporting history, there was a lovely volunteer, Kelly Jones. I think I even met her on one of her first days when she was coming along to join Wish, and she'd been going along volunteering and giving so much time at the, you know, in the museum and doing some wonderful work. She gave up loads of time. She sadly passed away recently as well. A lovely, lovely woman. So, you know, sad losses. But Also coming on to Wish, who are doing some amazing things. Just to say yet again, they've got to shout out about the Batsford dinner, which is going to be on the 31st of Jan. And from no one going to it, I think the same old Wombles have got a table. So, you know, if you come along to that event, not only will you see some of the ex-players, including, I believe, Dave Harry Bassett, you'll also see the same old Wombles there. So what better advert is there? I mean, I know that we're going
Don't
out
put them
to
off.
The 30 people, I believe, that voted for us as the best podcast out of a total of almost 500. I think that's I think we've done quite well there, chaps.
I think that, Matt, that makes us 1.8% official.
We've gone up. And it's great. Niall, you're now back home. You're now back. I can see you now rested from your exertions. That's how long this podcast has been. So it's basically from while travelling all the way home from London.
For Matt's benefit, I'll also say that I actually also was on the R7, which is another minor miracle. So there you go.
Okay. We can't go down that route. So the other thing that that is going to be coming up, and we'll talk about this nearer the time, is from the 14th to 16th of Feb, there's the Worldwide Wombles Weekend. And I believe Hans Sagers is going to be in attendance. So that'll be something worth putting your hand in your pocket for. So just on that, so that's all the things. And then the DTB, there's been some changes there. So there's a new change of chair. I'm right in saying that Sean McLaughlin is the new chair, with Angus Fox being vice chair there. So that's happened. And I just wanted to ask you, Mark, because I know you've got to go in a few minutes. What is that first meeting like? The first meeting when you're newly elected onto the board and you get together for the first time, and you've got people who've been there for a while and then some newbies coming in as well.
I guess it depends on you know, sort of how you front up as an individual. I mean, fundamentally, it can be a little bit daunting because you don't know a number of the individuals. Really, it's just about getting to know the particular individuals, getting to understand what they can do. I'm quite impressed by how Ian and Martin Drake, who we know, and also Simon Hood, have been quite engaging on social media, putting together different ideas and putting some of their ideas out there. Yeah. I think fundamentally, the activities in the John Trust board require lots of time and effort and engagement. And fair play to those people who stepped up to say, you know what, I can do these things. I can head up certain groups. Or in Sean's case, obviously, he's able to, I believe he's retired now, so he's able to take on the chair role. So, yeah, good luck to them, really. Interested again to see different new members of the DTB at games whenever we next have a home game, hopefully this coming Saturday against Tranmere, you know, to see them at the kiosk to be able to engage with fans as well. So it's always a positive thing.
Yeah, and you've mentioned Simon Hood. It's interesting because I know he's put together a document about, you know, some ideas. I believe that he was pulling that together during the election. So he sort of like, he asked for ideas that, and I think, you know, some are more achievable than others, but, you know, with an idea, there's no wrong ideas. Throw this stuff in and let's explore it and let's see what's possible. I still go back to Niall. I think your idea of having a volunteer coordinator, we've spoken about this many, many times, is a great one. And I'm really hoping that at some point that will actually happen. The club will employ a volunteer coordinator. I'm not talking about coordinating, you know, match day people. I'm talking about people of other things. Now, listen, before I'm just going to say farewell. Thank you very much, Mark. He's leaving us at the moment. We will see you on Saturday, my friend.
Absolutely. Look forward to it. Can we dance? Yeah.
So I think there's some really interesting stuff that's come up on Simon's thing, which hopefully we will have a look at and explore as well. But now your volunteer thing, we need to, hopefully that will happen at some point.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's something I've thought for a long time, and it's I just think we've got such skills and such talent within our fan base that we just really need to take that forward. And with all the kind of ambition ideas, and you know, Simon Hood has come out with some really good things there, and I think we should really try and take as quite a lot of them forward. But it requires having people on board to actually do it. And I think that's where, you know, the number one thing for me would be, let's find that 45, 50K that we need to have that volunteer coordinator in that can manage all these people, because I think it will pay itself back four or fivefold quite quickly, just in terms of, you know, savings and other incomes and fundraising streams and so on. I just think it's one of those that should really be a no-brainer, particularly for the ethos that underpins our club.
Awesome. Yeah, I agree with you, Niall. And just final thing, whilst we got you here, Niall, whilst we can actually hear you, how are things going? A little bit of an update on the football governance bill. Where are we up to with that?
Well, I was called in today with by the minister for the House of Lords, who's taking the bill through today with all the DCMS team, and they were asking us lots of questions about where we think things are. Lots of progress. They, as is the way with politicians, we'd asked about 20 questions on an email and we were wanting their responses. Those responses came through 3 minutes before the meeting started, so we weren't actually able to digest them all. So, you know, we had to talk through some of them, and we'll have a look through with our legal team later on to see whether they're actually good. The big thing that still remains, which is tomorrow, will be on the financial floats, the big conversation that we're after. And we made our point very clear that the regulator needs to look at how it solves some of the big problems in football. And that includes closing the financial gap between the divisions as the number one problem. And that means basically the top guys who have been seeing more and more money stay at the top end need to give a bit more down the pyramid, because it ruins competitive balance. It gets clubs overspending on things they can't do. And that's the one thing that we pressured them and said, look, you can't have this. It needs to be a situation. And they were kind of saying, well, you know, it's implicit, it might happen. And we were going, no, you need to spell it out. We can't have implicit. We want explicit. We want it named. The regulator will have the ability to say these are the things you need to address, and that's the bit that we're pushing for, and we'll see what happens over the next few weeks.
Brill. And so is it still at the House of Lords? When does it go back to the Commons, and when do we think we're going to see a vote on it? Just quick.
Right, so there's still the report stage in the Lords, back to the Commons probably sometime in February, goes through Commons. It then depends on recess. So I think we could be looking at being approved around Easter time, potentially. And because the shadow regulator has already been in play for quite a while, we could see a licensing regime potentially in place for start next season.
Awesome. There you are. So everyone get ready for Easter, a time for surprises and the football governance bill, one hopes. Mind you, I think we've had this date, these dates seem to be moved back and back.
I'm quite so happy. That,
I might add on a few months.
It's good there's a little recess there. You know, they need a recess. They need a little break. You know, it's too complicated.
But to be fair, Adam, tomorrow night, that bill will probably be discussed until about 1 o'clock in the morning.
That's fine.
And I will be there watching it until 1 o'clock in the morning.
I am pleased you are there doing your thing. You're not a paid politician, so you're doing an excellent job. The other people who are paid to be there, they better do their job. So, yeah.
Right. And I'll tell you what, that I will be thoroughly frustrated, probably annoyed, cross, but tomorrow night we're taking with us several representatives of clubs, people from things like Women in Football, Level Playing Field, Football Future, Fair Square, Supporters Trust groups. There's about 25 different organisations. We're all going to be in the gallery. We're all going to be hacked off. I've told them all they're not allowed to do any chants, like, what the hell do you think you're doing, or anything like that. We have to be quiet. We're not allowed to bring our mobile phones, but we'll see what happens.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Niall. That's great. Well, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed, honestly. Always, you know, the whole of football should be keeping its fingers crossed. I just want to end on one small thing. I was listening to a podcast the other day and I saw that Jeff Norcott's Lifestyle Wimbledon fan, and did you know, programme seller at Plough Lane, which is up because, I mean, I was a programme seller back in the day as well. And he was talking to the Woody Pearce Away Day podcast, talking about like away days and like first away days. And apparently his first away day was at Wembley, which isn't a bad one, is it, in the 1998 FA Cup final, which we like to mention. And I'm just trying to think, briefly if you can remember your first away date, because I have a feeling that mine might have been Coventry at Highfield Road. And that was one hell of an experience. That they have an amazing that when their fans got going, I mean, as a woman of fan, when I was watching them way back in the 80s, and you know, we weren't getting big crowds and going to Highfield Road, and I'm not saying they had hugest following, but it was amazing to be somewhere where suddenly this chant went round all the three sides of the stadium, where they were. It was quite incredible. I can't remember the score, but I have a feeling that was my first game. My first away trip was, of all places, to Coventry, to Highfield Road. No, I was.
I
I mean,
think
we might have done
it might have
London
been.
places before.
Yeah, first thing, I think we might have gone to Oxford on
Yeah.
your birthday as a birthday treat. And I think we lost 2-1 at Oxford.
I think you
Might
know
have
what?
been the other one.
Yeah, that was. I remember that vividly because it was. We'd got back safely by then. It was the day of the King's Cross fire. So that was 87. I think it was the day of the King's Cross fire. Blimey. What about you, Adam? Yeah, so happy memories that one, eh?
Oh my word. It's funny she said that. I'm listening to a whole thing about how the railways will save our future, and there's a whole section in the 90s where they had loads of problems which didn't help with the anyway with privatization, including crashes and fires and whatever. So yeah, exciting times. But yeah, no, so I wasn't sure. I said, I mean, I had to check in with my dad. I knew it would be a game against Southampton, actually, because 89, 88, 89, we moved as a family to the Isle of Wight. So the closest Premier games were going to be against Southampton. And I do remember going to the Dell a few times. And then in the 90s, I obviously went to college and university. So dad got a bit stressed out trying to find the programmes. He's now annoyed that he can't find some Southampton programmes, which I don't know where they are. They might be in my loft, they might be in my brother's, who knows. But the weird thing is, I think my first technically away game was at the Dell, Southampton, Wimbledon, October the 17th, 1992. And it was a 2-2 draw. That's one of the programmes we found. There might be an earlier one, we're not quite sure. There might have been a slightly later one. Again, it was trying to work out which games I came to before I went to uni and whatever or not. And the weird, I mean, the weirdest thing about that is literally, if I threw a stone hard enough from my window now, I could hit the houses that now sit on where the Dell football ground was. So it's kind of, I walk the dog past there like most days, and it's all houses. And I've seen a few YouTubes where they look at where the pitch was and whatever. I don't remember really any of the layout. I obviously remember sort of walking from the train station, but that's quite funny. But the most amusing thing, which I shared with you guys about all of this, is that there is obviously a little play area outside the houses and a massive sign that says no ball games. And it's like, it's so mad.
Well, it feels like their current team has taken that to heart,
Yeah,
haven't they?
exactly. Yes.
Not doing it. And don't go around throwing any more
That's
stones,
true. I
Adam.
shouldn't
Keep
I
the stones to
I
yourself.
shouldn't throw stones at non-existent football grounds.
Yeah. You know the rules. Don't throw stones at non-existent football grounds. And that's why we don't let you go past the old player lane site. Thank you very much, chat. Thanks to Tor Mark, who was here earlier on, the producer, Adam Proctor, for running to get here to record, Niall Monfrere for having us traveling all the way back from town back home and recording there. And my name is Matt Cooper. We are the Same Old Wombles. We'll be back.